Here's an interesting fact for you. There are nearly 1 million new books published in the U.S. alone every year. So if you like to read, how do you choose what you're going to read? Well, that's where Fully Booked by Kirkus Reviews comes in. You see, Kirkus has been one of the top book review publications for over 80 years. They do a deep dive on thousands of titles every year, including interviewing best-selling authors and telling you what might be the hot new release before everyone else knows. And it's coming to Podcast One in just a few weeks. So keep your eyes and ears open for Fully Booked by Kirkus Reviews.
That's right, Ting. Ting Mobile saves tons of money on your cell bill. It provides services on two nationwide networks, T-Mobile and Sprint. And it's offering our listeners $25 off Ting service. This is ridiculous. I can't understand why you wouldn't do it. Most numbers can be brought to Ting. You confirm that yours is one of them at drew.ting.com. And then you'll end up paying just for what you use, not what you'll think you'll use. Is this rational or what? Average monthly bill of $23 per device. Ting is helping people save a ton of money. No set plans. You need help. They have Ting's no-hold customer service. You get to speak to a real, knowledgeable person immediately. You're never put on hold. No robots. You get real people. No overage charges, no penalties, no contracts. First mobile service provider to allow you to have devices on different networks under the same account. And if you're stuck in a contract, Ting will give you credit if you're paying to come over to Ting. 80% of devices can, in fact, come on over. So visit Ting at drew.ting.com. Try Ting today. For our listeners, save $25 off select devices or receive $25 in Ting service credit just for getting started. Drew.ting.com.
And welcome to the Dr. Drew Podcast. We are, of course, taking your calls today. If you like the call show, so she will be able to do just that. Reminder to click through on the Amazon banner. It does not cost you a thing, but puts a little wind in the sails of this pirate ship. Also, the Swinging Sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast. There are three volumes there for you. Check them out. You're listening to a little taste of that right now. And Maxipata keeps telling me there will be a fourth, but I'm waiting a while for that. What's that, Chris?
These are timeless.
These are timeless. I agree with you, but we are going to bring another timeless album to bear, are we not?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. All right. Give us a call. We'll be a part of this conversation. And let's go on right out to Trevor. Let's talk to him. Trevor, what's up?
Hey, Dr. Drew.
Hey there.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I don't think you probably have enough time to really dissect me, but my question is essentially this. I'm 29 years old. I've continued to kind of work my way up in the workplace that I'm currently at and previously, but I really find myself, to be honest, just drinking way too much, smoking cigarettes, and taking Adderall that is not prescribed to me to keep up. And the hard thing is, I listen to you and I listen to Adam a lot and other people, and I know I need to stop, but the hard part is not suffering the consequences as of yet. Though I think you're right when you always say, well, when people hit rock bottom, you know, that's when they realize they have to stop. But I haven't hit that, but I don't want to hit that. And
right.
I'm just finding it very hard because I see... I mean, I've been in a relationship for almost 4 years, and I just see little symptoms, and I find myself kind of being quiet, going in, making a drink. I'm just looking for some advice.
Okay. So you're in this, I assume there's alcoholism in your family?
my mother was an addict to, go figure, speed. When she was younger, but she quit when she was 19.
So when I said there was a family history of addiction, the answer is yes. Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Yes.
Well, because you have that biology clearly operating here, and you just you don't typically get it unless you've got that genetic potential. And what do you do for work? What kind of work is it? Can you tell me?
I work in hospitality. I'm the general manager of a large. In a large company.
Okay. All right. That's fine. And for you to take time off to get treatment, how would that go?
To be honest, Dr. Drew, I've even looked into, I've called, I've tried to look online, I've followed some of your advice, I've even looked into stopping smoking. My grandfather, my mother's father, he died at 34 of a...
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. He died at 34 of a heart attack. When they did his autopsy, they said he had the arteries of an old man.
Yeah.
And that tends to run on that side, and... there's been a couple times where I've passed out. I don't know if it's blood sugar. I've called these hotlines just recently. And
right, so you're going to have to stay. You're going to have to focus on my questions. So in terms of you taking time off from work, how would that go?
Probably not well.
Okay,
not
so that's
well
something you cannot do. Is that accurate?
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. So eventually you're either going to die or the alcoholism is going to progress to the point that you're going to lose work no matter what. So you have to sort of let that reality in a little bit here. Now, as far as the cardiac screening, why don't you just see a doctor and get on a treadmill and see what your risks are?
I did that a few years ago. Okay. I did the stress test and they said everything was fine.
Okay, so maybe it's time for another one. But again, so that's pretty predictive of you being okay. So you've got time to spare from the standpoint of the cigarettes. The alcoholism sounds like it's really progressing. The Adderall is going to be a mess soon because you're going to start. How much Adderall are you using every day?
I would say on average probably 30 to 45 milligrams.
Yeah, so you know that's okay, but and hopefully you won't. What's that?
I'm sorry. I just had a random question. Mm-hmm. I've been noticing, like, the last 8 months, like, this sounds bizarre, but I'm getting blood to my extremities, like, in terms of my hands and my feet, like, they're red.
Yeah, that's alcoholic liver disease. Red palms is a classic sign of alcoholic liver disease. So, again, and that's more than anything related to estrogen metabolism and how the liver works when it gets sick from the alcohol. How much are you drinking the average day?
I would say if I bought one of those half-gallon jugs, I probably go through that in three to 4 days.
Okay, so about a quart a day.
3 days.
A quart a day on average.
And I've tried to get an idea of ounces, and it seems like it's 20, 25.
Yeah, okay, so that's enough to hurt you. It's also enough to have seizures. It's enough to have severe withdrawal. Are you okay in the mornings when you wake up?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have noticed, though, that when I wake up, I wake up every morning at the same time around 5 a.m., and mm-hmm. I'm almost having like a panic attack.
That's alcohol.
About my life.
That's alcohol withdrawal. When you have anxiety and the palpitations and sweats and all that, 4 to 8 hours after you stop drinking, that's alcohol withdrawal. And so you're in withdrawal, and that's fine. Do you shake at all?
Well, that's kind of what I say. Is when I get up and I'm thirsty for water and I grab it, I notice my hand not shaking, but it's not moving smoothly.
Right.
I don't know if that makes
sense. Yep, that makes sense. That's shaking. And so we have, you know, you have all the stigmata of real serious alcohol use, and it's going to get worse. It's not going to get better unless you do something active about it. And while you said that I talk about a rock bottom, I don't really talk about a rock bottom. What I say is people won't change until they're ready. And so what I'm interested in is these sort of moments of change. You know, what is it that gets somebody to change? And that's a complicated thing. I mean, if anybody could ever bottle that, we'd be in much better shape. There are people that, you know, suggest that cognitive behavioral therapies and motivational therapies might help you get to the point where you're willing to do something about this. A simple thing to do would be just to start going to 12-step meetings. It doesn't cost anything. It's not going to make you miss work. You're just going to go in and ask for help if that's what you want.
Right.
If you don't want that, well, then, you know, this is going to keep going. Are you using any other medication besides the Adderall?
No.
Okay. Have you used any other medications?
No, I have not.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, it's a tough situation, Trevor. I know it's hard. It's hard to get that momentum going and change. You know, Adam and I have been talking a lot about habits, and the habit of recovery is one that has to be lived. You have to go in and, you know, change directions. And I know how you love alcohol, and how you feel like you need Adderall and how your brain fights you on this. What's that?
If I could, just real quick, the bizarre thing, and one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you specifically is mm-hmm. just that I don't want it. I just find myself doing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get it, but your brain wants it. I guess I get that you, Trevor, don't want it, and that's sort of a classic thing that alcoholics say. It's like, in fact, when alcoholics kill themselves, sometimes they'll talk about that they're trying to kill that part of them that's driving this all this stuff. They themselves want to get better, but they feel like they have to kill the addict. And it's, you know, it's a brain disorder, and some part of you wants to get better, and some part of you knows that it's no good, and some part of you knows this has got to change. The question is, can you do it? Are you ready? Are you, you know, willing to make some efforts? And all you got to do, look up online, you know, 12-step meetings and go in, and maybe it's progress, not perfection, right? At this stage.
Right.
And if you could just expose yourself to some of these ideas and things, and I think more than anything else, let me just say this, all right? More than anything else, a relationship, a healthy relationship with somebody who's supportive could do volumes for you. It really could really help you. So if you go to a meeting and raise your hand and say, I want help, and you get the phone number of somebody who helps you find the motivation to change, hey, I don't care if that takes 6 months or 6 years. If you get there, that's all that really counts. Okay?
All right.
All right, Trevor.
Thank
good luck, man.
Thank you, Trevor.
Right, bye-bye. Let's talk to Jenny. Hi, Jenny. What's going on there?
Hi, Dr. Drew. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? What's happening?
I'm so excited to talk to you.
What's up?
So, my big thing is, I've been seeing a therapist. I've seen her on and off for like 2 years now because I moved, and so I do phone sessions with her.
Okay.
And so one of the things that came up was, I tend to vomit sometimes after I eat big meals.
Mm-hmm.
And then I talked to her about it because my boyfriend thinks it's an issue. I don't think it is. I brought it up to her, and she just said, like, well, you know, you have to identify your triggers, and if it's if you can identify your triggers, you can control it.
Hmm.
But the thing is, like, she hasn't really brought much attention to it other than the first two times I brought it up to her.
All right, let's talk about it. Hang on. How often do you vomit, would you say? Once a week?
Yeah, maybe once a week. I mean, there are periods of time where I go without it. I don't even do it at all.
For how long? How long does that go?
I could probably go a month without doing it.
Okay, but generally it's once a week, right?
Yeah, if I like feel terrible about my eating, yeah.
Okay, and when you say you feel terrible about it, is that because you binge and then vomit?
Yeah, or I eat something really bad. I've noticed that my trigger is eating chips. Like, sometimes I can go through like a giant family size bag of chips, and I'll just like, oh, I shouldn't have ate that, and then I feel disgusted with myself.
And
after.
Then how do you force yourself to vomit?
I stick my fingers down my throat, okay, and I make it come up.
Okay. And have you ever used diuretics?
No, I haven't.
Have you ever used?
I haven't used
laxatives.
Mm-mm. No.
Have you ever had a period where you vomited more than that?
Yes. More than once a week, I have done that before.
And when was that?
I probably did that last week, to be honest with you.
So last mm-hmm. week, what were you doing?
I was just working.
No. I mean, how many times did you vomit last week?
Oh, last week, three times?
Three times.
Yeah.
Four times?
Three times.
Four times?
Three times that month. Four times, no. Because I feel, and then I identify it as like, oh, maybe I'm having acid reflux where I eat really bad food where the food just sits weird. And I literally feel like a physical discomfort, and I feel much better when I vomit.
Right. And trust me, you're not having any physical problems from a bag of chips. You're not. And do you obsess about your body image? Do you feel fat, that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. I do feel fat.
Okay, and has mm-hmm. this always been kind of a thing, or is this something new?
I've always not been like, I haven't been very preoccupied about my body image.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be a lot fitter than I am now. I used to run like half marathons, work out 3-4 times a week, do yoga. I used to be like 115 pounds. I'm like 5'5".
And what are you now?
I'm probably like 125-ish, 130.
Okay, so thankfully you've not gotten yourself underweight. Well, I've been a bet you haven't given this whole history to your therapist. Is that true?
She knows my family history. My mom.
No. This history about your eating.
My eating?
This vomiting history. I don't think here
she did ask, like, how long I've done it for, how often, and then I disclosed that to her, and she said, she asked me how I've been feeling when I do it, and we've kind of identified it's usually when I'm a little bit busier, like I have more responsibilities, and then I eat as a... Yeah, I eat when I'm stressed, and then I feel guilty, and then I do it because I overeat because I'm stressed.
And did you talk to her about your body image stuff?
No.
Okay.
She didn't ask about any of that.
So, I mean, really what differentiates, you know, bulimia from other – one of the things that differentiates is the body image stuff. If you feel fat and you're not, that's a distortion, right? And that's that's a feature of a, you know, sort of a classic feature anyway of eating disorders. And certainly you're vomiting frequently enough to meet criteria for real trouble here. And you could hurt yourself. You could ruin your dentition. You can cause heart problems. This is something that you have to get a little more aggressive with because it's becoming chronic now. How many years have you done this for?
Probably in the last 2 years. That's it.
Yeah. Have you told your therapist, you talk to a doctor – and you said 2 years of once a week and up to four times a week is very concerning medically. And that she needs to pay careful attention to this. I'm glad you're in therapy and it sounds like you have a great relationship with her and it sounds like she's very attentive. But I'm not sure she got the full picture here. Either you were minimizing or she didn't ask the questions or I don't know. But, you know, 2 years of once a week and up to four times a week, you're going to get yourself in trouble. And that needs to be dealt with, okay? And I agree with your boyfriend. I agree with your boyfriend. I'm glad he's caring about you enough to bring it up and be concerned.
Oh, yeah. He thinks I have, like, BDD. He's like, you have BDD and you're bulimic.
Body dysmorphia?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's part – body dysmorphia, it's sort of – body dysmorphia is actually a preoccupation classically about the face, believe it or not.
Oh, I'm not.
Yeah, and it can be about but the body distortions go along with the eating disorder, feeling fat when you're not. And he's right. Your boyfriend sounds insightful and caring, and you know, he's not saying this to be an a-hole. He's saying it because he cares about you.
Yeah,
I know it's miserable. So it's miserable to change these things, and particularly eating disorders. You resist. You don't want to do it. That's part of the condition. But you have a good relationship with a therapist. You need to tell her you talked to a doctor, and he was concerned. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I will call her.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck. Let's go now to Raphael. Raphael, what's up?
Hello, doctor.
Hey there.
This is going to be edited, right? Posteriorly?
No. We just put it up as we do it.
Is there some, okay. Well.
What's the problem?
I wouldn't like my name out there, but okay.
Can you? Well.
Yeah. The thing is, I was calling for something entirely different, but now that I heard the last phone call, I have something else to bring up. But check it out. I have a friend who is a severe alcoholic. He has stage 4 cirrhosis.
Yeah.
He's been a friend for years, but he has a big personality disorder. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a professional, but I know that there's something. He's really aggressive. He's really brash. He's really repellent, defensive, insecure. But the insecurity there's a lot of anger.
Who knows? You know how much of that is alcoholism, and how much of that is personality, or maybe it could be all be alcoholism. Sometimes this stuff settles down when people get sober.
Yeah, he's been drinking since 15, but at this point, he has stage 4 cirrhosis. Mm. And I came back into his life because his children are the same children, and I think they deserve better. So I came back, and I took him to an outpatient center. The counselor there said that maybe he didn't look like he was a stage 4. So we made him an appointment with an internist. Today, right?
Okay.
So I took him to the internist today in the morning, and she said now he has stage 4. The thing is, the ammonia is very low, but the bilirubin is really high. Yeah. So that's how she could pinpoint it.
Does he have edema in his legs and swelling in his belly and all that stuff too?
Oh, his belly is swollen. Yeah. He's pale. Yeah, his, okay. His eyes are yellow. So anyway, I've been trying all day to get him. We're in Brownsville, Texas. We're almost Mexico. Okay, but he heard about a clinic detox. The internist recommended that we send him to detox so we can start the process and get him on the transplant list.
Great.
He was on a transplant list, but he got kicked out because he's still drinking. Today, he had a cousin living with him, and he's married with kids, but they have a guest house. So he's been living on the guest house. They kicked him out. And he had a cousin living with him, and the cousin is a cocaine addict, and he brings alcohol, too.
Okay.
So today I kicked him out. I told him to fucking disappear. I was going to fucking, hurt him.
I understand.
Call the cops on him, whatever. But he gave him some drinks, and he got super drunk. We called an ambulance. He made me call an ambulance, so we went to the hospital. We just got discharged. I'm back. So it occurred to me, I got the tweet that you were taking calls, so it occurred to me to call you. They're calling me tomorrow from a place that they're going to choose a right center for him. I don't really know where, because he's the one that got the contact, but they did a pre-intake thing. I did it for him because he's so difficult. But I was wondering if you had any recommendations of a place or just
I'm not quite sure what you're asking. He needs to go inpatient. He needs to go in now. Any place that is worth. I mean this is alcoholism 101, and any place has dealt with hundreds, maybe thousands of people just like this. There's as long as it's medically managed and there's a good internist there with lots of experience detoxing patients. They have to get his liver squared. They'll give him medication that sort of gives him a diarrhea that sort of clears out some of the bacteria that could start to accumulate ammonia and make him encephalopathic. They will use medication to prevent the withdrawal from becoming serious. Typically, we use medication called Cerax, which is a short-acting relative of Librium or Valium that we also typically use. But this one is not metabolized by the liver, and so it's cleared without accumulating. And other than that, it's magnesium and thiamine and all these things that we will give him. And then he needs to get in the program. He needs to stay sober. If he's going to get a liver, he's got to stay sober. And that's going to take a lot of work. He needs to, in my opinion, this is just like an opiate addict. He should spend a year in treatment.
I think so, too. I told him that as long as he helps himself, I'm here to help. But other than that, I'm going to disappear from his life. We can't keep enabling him. And I was wondering, is there a rehab center that you would recommend or a detox center that you would recommend?
In Texas?
Anywhere, really. He has United Healthcare, and I think it's pretty good.
It sounds like he might want to do his detox in a hospital. And then beyond that, Houston, Menninger's a great program, and they probably have something there for alcoholics, I would imagine. So Menninger's, if you're in Houston, that's a great place. Dallas has Dallas has all kinds of communities that are available there. I can't think of a name offhand. I know some of the women's programs, but believe me, these cities have tons of treatment available. Just find a good doctor, take their reference. This is not really a special case in the sense that it needs sophisticated care. It's pretty obvious what needs to be done here, and any treatment center will be able to handle that. We're going to take a little break and be right back.
A couple of months ago, I received a box of samples of a new oral rehydration solution called Hydrolite. Now, I've been thinking about this for a while. I always thought there should be a good solution to things like vomiting and diarrhea and even hangovers. And just so happened, I was about to undergo a routine medical procedure, colonoscopy. I was getting a little dehydrated. I was tired out. But I thought, this stuff is perfect, and it's exactly what I imagined. These little fizzy tablets or a powder or a pre-mixed solution. It worked, and it worked precisely the way I knew it would. So I immediately reached out to them, and I'm excited to welcome Hydrolite to our family. It's a rapid, effective recovery from dehydration. It requires a proper balance of sodium, glucose, water. It's crucial if you're sick, you've been vomiting, or experiencing heavy perspiration, even from intense exercise, Water alone isn't what you need. Sports drinks are far less effective and are not specifically medically balanced for rehydration. Quite simply, Hydrolite's formulation is based on established science. It is the best rehydration product I have tried or seen. I'm very excited about them. They come in great flavors, orange, berry, lemonade. It's available, as I said, pre-mixed drink, a powder, or my preference, these effervescent fizzy tablets you simply drop in a glass of water. I can't say enough about this. Compared to sports drinks, Hydrolite delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. Again, you're trying to keep up with fluids and replace them rapidly. This does just that. Hydrolite solutions are appropriate for all ages. Each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow instructions. You can find Hydrolite at Rite Aid or online at Amazon.com. For more information, visit Hydrolite. That's H-Y-D-R-A-L-Y-T-E, Hydrolite.com. Well, the rising cost of prescription medication is no joking matter. It concerns me not just as a doctor, but as a patient. That's right. Listen, I have to take a bunch of medications for my cholesterol and having prostate cancer and whatnot, and my blood pressure. But even with good insurance, the price of medication has become a big concern for most of us. I know, geez, when I see the actual price of the medication as well as what I have to pay, I'm stunned every time I have a prescription refilled. And with patients, they complain, I have to worry about it. It's an issue. Well, let me introduce you to RefillWise, R-E-F-I-L-L-W-I-S-E, a prescription saving card that you can get on your phone right now for free. No sign up, no wait time. Save on your next prescription. Simply use your mobile phone, text Drew, D-R-E-W, to the number 22822. Again, that's Drew to 22822, and you will immediately receive your RefillWise prescription savings card ready to use. Just show it to your pharmacist and see how much you can save for your prescriptions. It works with major pharmaceutical companies to establish discounts on the price of over 6,000 commonly used medication. Right now, more than 1 million people are using this card. The average savings, 40%, and some up to 80%. I use it. So if you have medication not covered by insurance, make sure to check the RefillWise price at your pharmacy. Even if you have insurance, the RefillWise discount might actually be bigger, so it always pays to check before you check out. Also, I'm thrilled that for every new user, RefillWise will donate $1 to the Prostate Cancer Foundation, a charity that is very dear to my heart. Check them out at pcf.org. To learn more about RefillWise and see if your medication could be covered, check out refillwise.com. But to start saving right now, just text DREW, that's Drew, to the number 22822. Again, that's 22822. Message and data rates may apply. TrueCar, everybody. Yep, there's something about TrueCar a lot of people don't know. It can help you buy a used car. Well, if you don't know, you should know by now because Adam and I have been talking about it. In fact, there are over 500,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. So whether you're looking to buy new or used, you can get upfront pricing information that empowers discounts off the list price for used and new cars. It's a better buying experience through our TrueCar certified dealer network. As I said, there are over 500,000 pre-owned vehicles available. You'll see what other people paid either on the TrueCar app or go to TrueCar.com. You'll find out what a fair price is in your area and you feel confident. And then you connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing. Enjoy a quick, easy buying experience. So using that TrueCar app or the TrueCar website, you can easily find the new or used car you want. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar.com or download that TrueCar app to enjoy a better buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
I think you've heard me talk about Ting now. Of course, this is this mobile service that saves you a ton. We're offering $25 off Ting service for our listeners. Most phones, most numbers can be brought to Ting. You confirm yours is one of them by going to drew.ting.com. Then you will end up paying just for what you use, not what you'll think you'll use, just what you're using. No contracts, no plans, no nothing. Just use your phone, pay for the service. Average bill, $23 per device. Ting is helping people save a lot of money. We want you to do so. No overages, no charges. It's the first mobile service provider to allow you to have different devices on different networks under the same account. And if you're stuck in a contract, Ting will give you credit if you're paying to go over to Ting. 80% of devices are eligible to come on over. So visit drew.ting.com and try it today. Dr. Drew listeners save $25 off select devices or receive a $25 in Ting service credit just for getting started. Go to drew.ting, T-I-N-G, drew.ting.com.
And welcome back. Of course, this is Dr. Drew Podcast. Let's go on back out to calls. This is Megan. What's up, Megan? 31.
Hey, how are you?
Great. What's going on?
Not much. I had a question. I'm
going through, like, a paternity custody case with a celebrity family.
Okay.
They literally have the means to make my life miserable, which is what they've been doing. They've been trying to, you know, push court back, hire attorneys in, like, another state, and, like, basically financially drain me so I can't fight it.
It happened to a friend of mine, Jason Patrick, a famous actor. He had a family fight him because of a glitch in a sort of a fertility treatment. He became officially not the father, even though he'd been raising the kid, and it was just a big mess. These paternity cases just become such a – they're terrible. So go ahead.
Well, we already got the paternity test back. It's not that. I'm
not saying I didn't say establishing paternity. I'm saying this being able to custody battles. Let's put them under that category.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's terrible.
So basically, they're just trying to financially bankrupt me. I worked in the adult industry 9 years ago, and my daughter's father knew my name. Nobody else did. And then, in the midst of doing all this, he decided to have his friend make up a blog about me online under my real name, where they posted photos of me from 9 years ago, side by side with photos, personal photos that I had sent him. And they tied it to my real name, and it's gotten to the point where people have showed up to where I live trying to book me like they would book an escort. And it's just turned into like this crazy nightmare. And I've gone and tried to file police reports, but because everything was done online, they're telling me there's nothing I could do because I have no proof it's them.
What would the police report be? What would you be accusing them of?
Well, they posted like personal photos of me that I'd only sent my daughter's father with photos of me from the adult industry from 9 years ago. They posted them side by side to say, like, you know, this girl is also this girl. To tie the two names together. So
that doesn't sound illegal on its surface, is it?
Well, isn't it considered revenge porn if they're posting naked photos of you online?
I see. Okay. I don't know what
Would that be if the photos are not private photos taken by that person? They're out there publicly.
Well, once you distribute anything on, you know, text or anything public, or on its electronic media, unfortunately, there was just a big...
Well, but this wasn't that. The revenge porn aspect of it is real porn that she sold.
No, I understand. No,
that's not the revenge porn aspect. Like, that's fine because that's online. But the personal photos that I'd sent him...
Oh,
like
those ones are
naked. Side by side.
Right.
Posting them side by side with the public photos being like, well, this girl under this porn name is also this girl. This is her real name. Like, to compare them. Like tying me to that identity from 9 years ago.
But it's
the fact where,
it's
like,
true,
if
though,
some
right?
crazy person, it is true.
Okay.
But it's like nobody ever knew that name. And the fact that I'm having people show up at my house trying to book me when my children are there, like I'm an escort, like that's the only reason I even found out about it.
Crazy.
Like, because some man around Christmas time showed up to my residence looking for me under that former name.
It's tough. That's really tough. Whatever it is, it just sounds like an awful experience. Right?
Yeah, it's pretty terrible.
Yeah, sounds awful. So what is it you want to do? What's the question?
I mean, like, you know, what do you think, like, the best thing to do is? Like, because they're trying to do all this privately, do I, like, make it public and hope that, like, you know, they'll stop pushing everything back because they want to, like, hurry up and shut it up?
I don't, or you're asking me, you know, it's sort of like asking me, first of all, I'm not a lawyer. Secondly, you're asking me to sort of diagnose the disease without reviewing the records. I have no idea what is at issue here. So I can't really make a recommendation. It just sounds awful. And I just hope you're getting proper support around you and letting people help you through this and getting good, you know, legal representation. It sounds awful. It sounds expensive. It sounds miserable. And I'm sorry you're going through this, but I don't know that I'm in a position to really. It's not a medical issue. It's a legal issue. And whatever your attorney says, just stick with it and do and make sure that it's somebody who's not, you know, raking you through the system. The family court systems are extremely challenging. And it just sounds awful. It sounds really bad. Alex, what's up?
Hey, Dr. Drew. Longtime fan. Calling because I'm having trouble kind of getting out of my own head. Whenever I'm in a situation, I always hear, it's like I'm above myself. I hear someone else talking, or I'm overanalyzing every situation I'm in.
Sort of. Do you mean literally, or do you mean sort of in your mind's eye?
In my mind's eye.
Yeah. You don't literally hover over yourself or anything.
No.
Well, no. Some people dissociate, and they feel like they literally believe. They feel as though they're looking at themselves from above.
Okay.
Not that. But sort of your mind's eye, like you're sort of objectifying everything that's happening. You're not in it.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Give me an example specifically.
The worst one probably came with a girlfriend where it ended up in performance anxiety. And I just kind of thought about it, kept getting worse. And every time we would go to get physical, I'd have some sort of anxiety issue that would lead to performance anxiety.
Okay. So this is an anxiety disorder you're talking about.
Yes.
Hey, Gary. Would you call him and tell him I'm doing this podcast? Mr. Carroll is calling me. So is that what we're talking about generally here, or some sort of anxiety disorder or social anxiety?
Yeah, I would say it's anxiety based probably on self-esteem issues.
Well, the self-esteem and anxiety are separate phenomena. They can overlap. Okay. But, and so how come you're not getting that treated?
I've started to. I started going to see a counselor.
And?
And they told me to meditate and no medication or anything like that. But
okay, so mindfulness. All right, that's a reasonable thing. Is there any like cognitive behavioral therapy they're doing with you?
Not yet, no. I just started it a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
So we're still in the feeling out process, I believe.
All right, so you're getting treatment. It takes a while. I mean, I had bad anxiety. I have an anxiety disorder, panic disorder, and it took me years to sort of get it under control and the kind of therapy. I had sort of emotionally focused therapy, and it worked great for me, but it takes time. It doesn't go away. There's no magic. There's no recipe to get over this. If there was some magic recipe, you'd get over it. You'd be over it already. But that's why there's something called treatment, which is really – do you feel as though the therapist is really attuned to you and is listening carefully?
I'm still figuring that out, but so far I think
what does that
mean? I've had positive
results. Are you a trauma survivor?
No, sir.
Did you have some adverse childhood experiences, like physical abuse or something?
No, none of that.
What was your upbringing like?
Both my parents were around. Dad worked a lot, but they stayed together. I mean, they were always together. It was a happy upbringing, I would say.
No one ever struck you.
No, absolutely not.
Okay. And did they have any, either of them having anxiety disorder?
No, not really. Both work too much to have any problem like that.
Well, so you never asked them?
We've talked about it more recently, and I've expressed like my issues, and seem kind of foreign to it. So
their idea of having anxiety and being in your head and obsessive thoughts and all that stuff, they couldn't get that. Neither of them.
Yeah, not at all.
Because that kind of stuff does tend to go in families, too. That's the other way you can easily get these things. How are your relationships?
All my social – I mean, they're all pretty good. Social stuff, work stuff, I have no issue with any of that. Romantic stuff is catch as catch can, you know.
Huh. And why not medication? Just out of curiosity.
I do Xanax every now and then if I'm having a bad panic attack.
Right.
At one point, I was depressed for a little bit, but it was kind of based on a situation in my life. And I was seeing a counselor through my college, and they wanted to go into medication, like Zoloft or one of those. And I kind of pushed back on that because it was much more situation-based than it was like a brain disorder, I thought.
Well, all these things are sort of short-term. They're not meant to be long-term solutions necessarily for the kind of mild symptoms you're having. And I think Xanax is more of a problem than getting on something that might be more definitive for this, at least for a period of time that you can kind of break the cycle.
I would say I take it less than two times a month, than that.
I still don't. I just – the benzos just tend to make things worse rather than better. But,
okay.
But it's all right. I mean, that's not that big a deal, but I don't know. I don't understand why you wouldn't get this. This has a very biological feel to it, given your, it just does. And I just don't think you necessarily have to suffer like this, but that's up to you. And certainly the long-term solution is talk, for sure. No doubt about that. Bill, what's up?
Hey, Drew.
Hey.
Hey, long time listener. Got kind of an odd situation here. Last night, I got a call last night from my girlfriend's parents. Her brother had, well, him and his girlfriend had got a little freaky, and he put a rope around his neck because he liked to be choked. And, well, long story short, he ended up in the hospital, and he is on life support right now, not breathing on his own. Mm-hmm. We've been trying to get through to him to, I don't know, just stop with, you know, the drugs and the, all this stuff. I don't even know if there's a way to get through to him. But
well, he takes opiates, right? Painkillers?
No, actually, I shouldn't say no because I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's a sort of a classic thing for opiate addicts. They don't feel sexual satisfaction even when they come off the opiates, and they'll often get into asphyxiation as a way to try to get that back. That's a common thing. So if this is a drug addict, he's now dying of drug addiction, and he needs to, after he wakes up and before he can say no, he needs to go somewhere for a long period of time and really get treated.
Yeah, now you mentioned that he did mention, you know, it's about a few years ago, he mentioned something about taking pills, but,
yeah,
you know, it's just, I guess he's got two kids, you know, and we're trying to get
through. He needs to go away for many months and get proper treatment. You're in Michigan. Go down to Hazleton and outside Minneapolis. It's one of the best programs in the country. Hazleton, Hazeldn, outside of it's in Minneapolis.
Okay.
So once he's of the right mind again and able to participate in treatment, get treatment. Okay?
Thanks.
All right, you got it. This is Sean. What's up?
Yeah, hi, Drew. My grandpa is in the beginning stages of Alzheimer's, and a few weeks ago, he told my mom, which would be his daughter, that he had a dream about her, and that he's a widower. My grandma passed away, so he said that since his wife passed, that he had a dream about my mom, and that he thinks that they should sleep together. And
right,
I just wanted to know if you've ever heard of that.
Very common, seen it a million times. It's going to it's going to get worse. He's going to start grabbing and doing things that seem bizarre because his brain isn't working right. And with men, when their frontal lobes start to deteriorate, they start to they can become hypersexual and they can't contain their impulses. Wow. And they will do stuff that is terribly upsetting to family. You need to take him to a neurologist. You need to describe these symptoms because this is a massive brain deterioration. There are medications. There are chemical restraints that can help you. But sometimes this breaks right through everything. So
a neurologist.
Yes. How come he has Alzheimer's? Okay. If he has Alzheimer's, he needs a neurologist.
Well, I know that he's on some prescription. I don't know the details and who he's going to or what.
Well,
definitely have to look into.
Yeah, some of the anti-dementia symptoms medication can make these sorts of symptoms worse. So again, you need an expert that can really get this all balanced out properly. Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. You get it. Good luck. This is Tony. What's up, Tony? Tony?
Hi, Dr. Drew.
Hey there.
Hi, Dr. Drew.
What's going on?
Hey, with the popularity of that new podcast, Missing Richard Simmons.
Yeah.
People at work are going crazy about it. And plus, I think Howard mentioned it. Howard Stern mentioned it today as well.
He did.
I was just, yeah. Oh, did you hear it?
Yeah, I did. And it sounded confusing. I don't know which podcast you're talking about. There's different ones, but you're talking about the one by his former
Missing Richard Simmons, I think.
And who does that? That's that woman that knew him forever.
I think that person was a guest on one of the episodes, the former masseuse.
Yes.
Yeah, person, I believe, was a guest on the Missing Richard Simmons podcast. I don't know what the connection is of the people who host it. I think they're just interested.
People that really like him.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were friends of his or something, they befriended him. But this particular podcast, it's number one. It's huge, and everybody's just talking about it at work. Like, it's insane.
Is it because they're talking about what happened with Richard Simmons, or why?
Well, it's because no one has seen him in 3 years.
I understand what makes but that's just a fact. What makes the podcast so popular?
You know, it has the timing and feel of that Serial podcast.
I see. So they're looking. So, they're trying to figure out what's going on.
There's a lot of speculation. Yeah. About his housekeeper's keeping him hostage.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense at all.
People like conspiracy theories and a lot of crazy chicks like Richard Simmons. I mean, Gina Grad's obsessed with it. I would tell her to her face that she's a nut.
With this podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, what do you want? You want to try some theories on me, Tony?
Well, I was just thinking if you were watching from afar and had any
Richard,
speculation, not diagnosis from afar.
I know Richard. I've met him several times. He seems like he's been getting terribly depressed lately. And, you know, when people get older, they withdraw and they hide out and they get depressed. They don't want people to see him. That happens a lot. And it seems like that's what might be happening to Richard. I don't know. I have no idea because I don't – you know, you need a lot of evidence to really figure out what's going on here. I can pretty much guarantee you there's no foul play, particularly with national attention, you know, scrutiny. There's somebody somewhere would know something, believe me, and say something. So that does not make any sense at all. I'll eat my words if I'm wrong, but that does not make any sense. It makes more sense if you want to come up with a paranoid theory that Richard is in on this and is helping set up the podcast. That sounds more like Richard than somebody is holding him hostage somewhere.
Right. You know, they make the point of him being tour buses, especially wanting to go past his house because he would come out and greet everybody. And,
right.
And he was kind of a sure thing. Like, right. you're sure to spot the celebrity. And I can't imagine having that relationship with the public and just being shut in for 3 years without something being really wrong.
Right. Like, it could be depression, right? Or it could be something medical going on. We don't know. Something here, maybe because of the medical condition, he doesn't like, you know, he doesn't want people to see him in the condition he's in. I don't know. He, you know, he always alluded to there being some heavy trauma or something in his past. Have you ever heard him talk about that? Like, whenever he.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's the kind of person that would have some, you know, significant mood stuff down the line. That would not be that surprising, would it?
Yeah. Well, if he listens to your show, Dr. Drew, we miss him. And
I miss him too. He's a great guy. And he is a great guy. And he's fun as hell when you get around him. I've been around him a couple times. And he is always on. And maybe he's unable to do that now. And when he can't be on, he's just off. And he doesn't want to be, yeah. You know, doesn't want the world to see that. And I get that. All right?
Yeah.
All right, Tony.
Thank you.
You bet. Good luck. Thanks. And this is Grace. What's up, Grace?
Hi, Grace. Or excuse me.
You're Grace.
Sorry, I'm nervous. Sorry. Yeah. So, hi. Well, my boyfriend who I'm with now, whenever I perform oral sex on him, he doesn't pre-cum. And he doesn't produce any ejaculate whenever he claims that he climaxes. Hmm. And it's difficult because I really take it personally. I've asked him point blank, you know, why is it something that I'm doing? But he always says, no, you know, yeah, I did. But, I mean, it's noticeably absent. And he's 35, so I don't know if his age plays a factor into that.
No, that's still young. That is still young. So tell me again. So the symptoms is that he does not ejaculate even though he says he has a climax, right?
Yes.
That's only during oral sex?
We use a condom whenever we have actual intercourse, so I really wouldn't know. But
that's the only issue. Wait. That's the only issue is that there does not seem to be an ejaculate. Otherwise, everything's normal?
Right. Oh, yes. Correct, yes.
Okay, so his desire is normal, his drive is normal, the way he responds to you is normal, just no ejaculate, mm-hmm. Right?
Right, correct, okay. Yes.
Is he on any medication?
I don't believe so, no. Sometimes he takes allergy medication, okay, but no, nothing major. He's in good health.
Well, even allergy medicine can cause something called retrograde ejaculation, which is where during climax the semen goes back up into the bladder, and that's kind of a common thing. So it makes me wonder if that's what he's got. That would be not that big a deal. And that can happen, certainly. And sometimes it happens for no good reason, and sometimes it goes away, too. But it's something that a urologist should evaluate if he's having that. As a young man, that shouldn't be happening without good explanation.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Good deal.
Okay. You got it.
Thanks for your input.
You got it. Retrograde ejaculation. Are these other lines on here for reals or no? Okay. So I'm going to wrap it up here. Thank you all for taking a listen here. Do support the products that support us. I'm very excited. We have a new sponsor, Hydrolite. They are the product they created is a product I wanted to have. I designed it in my head. I started talking to Adam's people about it.
Bring some with you.
Yeah,
what?
For years.
Bring some in with you.
Of course I will. I've got a big box of them. I found because they were distributing it to doctor's offices as samples. And I was like, oh my God, this is this thing I was trying to create with Adam's guys.
I'd be more than happy to product
it. It's all right. It's these fizzy tablets or powder and also a pre-mix thing. But it's a rehydration solution that is – it's better than Pedialyte, and that's the one that sort of dominates now. This is better. This product dominates in Australia. And it's something I use during my colonoscopy. If I ever had nausea and vomiting, I would use it. If you want to recover after
I was going to say, I don't think I'll be using it for any of that.
After a night of drinking, it's a good thing the next day. So Hydrolite, check them out. Hydrolite.com, you can get their stuff. But I cannot recommend them strong enough because it was exactly what I wanted to create. But there you go. And we do appreciate you checking us out. Check out The Swinging Sounds. Send us your emails. Check out – go to DrDrew.com, please, and check out me and Bob Forrest on This Life, and me and Dr. Spaz on The Weekly Infusion, and, of course, me and the Adam and Dr. Drew Show, Adam and I, every day. Check us out. We'll see you then. See you next time.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's DrDrew Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the Swingin' Sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com.